There are some things you wouldn't mind being stuck with, like a large unexpected inheritance. An always-on-the-verge-of-death phone that has to be plugged in just right so it charges is not one of those things. Switch to Verizon and we'll pay off your old phone, up to $800 via prepaid MasterCard, so you can get a new one. Just trade in any phone from our top brands on any unlimited plan. With new line on my plan. Additional terms apply for trade-in and pay off your phone offer. See Verizon.com for details.
You're listening to Marketing News Canada, Canada's number one show featuring the brightest minds in marketing, PR, and digital advertising.
Well, welcome to another episode of Marketing News Canada. This is a very special episode as I get to introduce one of my favorite podcasts, Four Peas in a Pod, and you get to preview it, taste it, sample it. You're going to the Costco of podcasts today because you came in expecting one thing, came in expecting to buy some toilet paper, and you get a taste something new. They're like, hey, taste this sample. So I want to introduce my two guests who are the two hosts of Four Peas in a Pod. Tell me, first of all, introduce yourselves and why did you start this show?
Yeah, love the Costco reference, by the way. This is very much a walk-in expecting to just buy the staples, your milk, your toilet paper, maybe some cookies, croissants, a rotisserie chicken, but then coming out with a new toaster oven or something. But hopefully it's something that you can make use for and something that has utility. That's what we're aiming to do with Four Peas in a Pod. But just a quick introduction. I'm JP. Along with Jeeves here, I work at General Mills and I head up our snacks and baking marketing team in the UK.
And my name is Jeeves, and I lead the omnichannel team at General Mills, but in Canada. And as JP mentioned, we're both two CPG marketers who absolutely love this space and want to share that passion with as many people as possible. And so by night, we co-host this podcast called Four Peas in a Pod.
And why? Why a podcast? Why another podcast in the realm of the podcastlandia?
Yeah, I mean, does the world really need another podcast? And we certainly asked ourselves that question. But much like lots of podcasts in the last, call it 3 or 4 years here, it was born out of the pandemic. You got these two guys going on long, socially distant walks, coming up with ideas. And I think one thing that that stuck out in our minds during that time was our hearts went out to anyone out there really trying to break into the marketing industry, particularly students or career switchers. We benefited a lot from in-person connection with other people. And we felt that there were a lot of people during the pandemic who just didn't have those usual networking opportunities available to them. So ultimately, we just really wanted to create a podcast where it could feel as if you were having a one-on-one conversation or a coffee with somebody who maybe felt out of reach. And these are people who are top marketers in their field, in their industry in Canada. And so we just wanted to create and foster that connection a little bit through a podcast medium.
Yeah. And to build off what JP said, we dusted off the idea 3 years later and we felt as if it was still very relevant. It's still so difficult to break into the industry. And we feel as if there's so many myths that still exist around marketing that we thought needed debunking. So we created the podcast to help aspiring marketers all the way to seasoned vets have a richer, fuller understanding of what marketing is all about and show everyone why we ended up falling in love with this industry all those years ago. So every few weeks, we interview a different Canadian marketer in a different industry and point in their career. And what I'd also say is, Darian, to yourself, we're huge fans of what your team at Marketing News Canada has been doing. And we felt as if we could help shine another spotlight on all of the amazing marketing talent that Canada has to offer.
It's amazing. Okay, we have an episode. I feel like this is like an old school talk show. It's like, we're going to watch a clip here from your new movie coming out. But we have an episode that we're going to transition to here. Why don't you set up this episode? And maybe before that, tell us maybe some other episodes that people can find where there's going to be a link in the show here where they can find your podcast, maybe highlight some of the guests that have been on it, and then set up this episode for our listeners.
Sure. So you can find the podcast anywhere you find your podcasts, which is so cliche, but you truly can. We've had about 25 episodes in the past year, which include these hour-long episodes with marketers from companies such as the NHL, TELUS, Pinterest, Wealthsimple, KFC, Cineplex, the list goes on and on. And today, we're actually excited for you to hear some of our recent conversation with Kate Torrance, who is the VP of Brand, Content, and Comms at SickKids. In our episode with her, we unpacked her remarkable career journey. We got a behind-the-scenes look at how the iconic SickKids Versus platform was created, and so much more. And to go back to that Costco analogy, we hope you like what you sample and are ready for the full episode in bulk, which can be found again in our Four Peas in a Pod feed.
It's lovely. Check it out. Four Peas in a Pod. Check out this episode. You got to listen to it now. A little amuse-bouche. You get a taster. You get to taste what it's all about. And make sure you subscribe to their show as they've got more episodes brewing and coming down the pipeline soon. Thanks for being here for Marketing News Canada, and enjoy this episode.
Right. But actually, strangely, I can't even believe it, but it's 9 years since then, and I'm still at SickKids and still absolutely loving every day.
Thanks so much for that wonderful summary of your career so far. I want to touch on what you talked about in terms of knowing that maybe an agency wasn't for you. And you talked a little bit about, oh, in one case, it was, I felt like I was a cog in a massive machine and that wasn't for me. And so if you're speaking to a student who maybe is looking at, there's a lot of agencies, can't I just join any one of them? What are some of the things that you would advise them to think about, right? So it sounds like team size, company size would be one factor. Are there any other things that you would suggest as, you know, really talk to the people in there and ask them these types of questions?
Yeah, absolutely. Actually, I have a good story. One of the agencies that I worked at, I guess I can, it doesn't exist anymore. So I guess I can say I worked at GRIP. And there was a young student, and he had made a pinata of the GRIP logo. It was full of candy. And he sent the pinata to one of the founders along with, okay, this is the 90s. So a CD with, you know, that had a link to a website on it that I think said, I want to work at grip.com. And it had a personal letter to the senior guy and said, hey, if you're having a bad day and you need to beat the shit out of something, I sent you this pinata. There's a treat inside. And when he did beat the shit out of the pinata, like the CD fell out that had, you know, his portfolio on it and a little letter about why he wanted to work at GRIP. And the founder was so excited. He's like, I can't wait to meet this guy. He's got a job and I haven't even met him yet because he's just created this really interesting experience for me. And then before he called the student, he paused. And then he went online and looked up, I want to work at taxi.com. I want to work at BBDO.com, and discovered the student had done the exact same thing for every agency. And the entire wind was sucked out of the sails of the idea. And I'm pretty sure, I don't know if he called the student or if he gave him that tip or any of those things. But the thing I took away from that I would then pass on to students is, yeah, you're not for everywhere. You don't want to work at every agency. And an agency wants you to think that you want to work there, not just anywhere. So there's a lot of agencies in Toronto. So you do have more choice than you know. And if you go to the place that's the right fit, where you're inspired, you respect the leadership, you look at the caliber of work, you look at the size relative to how you operate, and you go after the one you want, you'll be more successful anyway. So my advice always to students is read the trade publications, read the award case studies, look at the agency websites. Do you like the work? Does the work resonate with you? Does it seem diverse enough? Do they have, and by diverse, I mean, do they have great voices from different ages, ethnicities, backgrounds? These are the types of things that you can help figure out what's going to be a good fit for you. And then, you know, make a short list and then, you know, reach out and make sure they know that you're not just going for a job at any agency, but why you want to work there and what you would hope that you could learn and what you hope you could bring based on what you know about their values. And I really feel like that will make them stand out from other sort of like people who are just blanket sending CVs to every single agency out there.
That's an amazing story. Oh my God. I was like, as you were starting the story, I'm like, oh, I applied to GRIP once. And I was like, I should have done the pinata. I'm like, that's why I didn't end up getting the job. But then as you went through it, I'm like, Oh my God. It's such an important message because I know students, they're so keen, at, you know, trying to find the right job for them. And it's very difficult out there. There's sometimes only very few positions with a lot of applicants. And so the bias could be like, how do I make this as efficient as possible and just do whatever it takes to try to get my name out there. But to your point, you have to be still very intentional. The industry is very small. People talk to one another. That one size fits all approach is not going to work. You're going to need to personalize it. And maybe it's not making a custom pinata for a few of the companies. It could be as simple as customizing your resume or asking a different set of questions when you're chatting with that person. But I think it's a really important message, and love that you shared some of these questions that you were asking yourself at these different points in your career to help students make the most informed decision. The question I would have is, you've worked on so many clients. You mentioned Labatt, Starbucks, Quaker, Campbell's, the list goes on. It's like a who's who of the most iconic brands globally. Are there some universal truths that you've come across that hold true, whether regardless of industry or company? Because one thing we're trying to do on the podcast as well is debunk some myths that exist about marketing and help understand students understand what the through lines are that exist across industries. So just curious on if there are some universal truths that really resonated with you.
I think one would be that the best creative work happens when you have a small team and fewer people getting their fingers in the pot of the decision. Mm-hmm. An example I would use actually is Bell. I worked on that business from 2010 to 2015. And considering the size of the organization, the number of business units they have and various products and services, you might think that it was a very complex organization with a lot of stakeholders that needed to be managed at every stage, that somebody like Bell would test absolutely everything and need the data to validate every marketing decision, et cetera, et cetera. I feel like one of the strengths of Bell, the kind of both brand work and sort of product marketing work that they were doing at the time, was they had a very small collection of senior people who knew what they were doing, who trusted their gut, and made decisions and were fast and nimble and accessible. There were just nowhere near the levels of people to go through and processes and research things to test. They hired smart senior people, a small group of them. They had a process for ensuring they talked to each other. They made decisions fast. So that to me is one of the biggest mistakes that a lot of organizations can make, especially larger, more complex ones, is thinking that, you know, more people and more validation and more is going to somehow make the work better and more foolproof, when in fact I think it's the opposite. And without a doubt, that principle was, you know, partly why Versus was successful, is the folks that like who was in the room when we saw the idea and who had the authority to say yes, interestingly enough, it's one of the biggest reasons why other organizations call us. The question is, how the hell did you get that through the stakeholders?
Yeah.
Like what, how did you sell it? Mm. So, I mean, there's a story behind that, but one of the biggest reasons is that we actually agreed who on the team had the authority to make those calls based on their experience and their expertise, that we trusted them to do the job that they were hired to do.
There are some things you wouldn't mind being stuck with, like a large unexpected inheritance. An always on the verge of death phone that has to be plugged in just right so it charges is not one of those things. Switch to Verizon and we'll pay off your old phone, up to $800 via prepaid MasterCard, so you can get a new one. Just trade in any phone from our top brands on any unlimited plan. With new line on my plan, additional terms apply for trade-in and pay off your phone offer. See Verizon.com for details.
One question as it relates to that transition in your career, was it even a thought in your mind that you were going to make a transition from agency side to, let's say, client side? Because it sounds like early in your career anyway, you're practically the client, right? Like you're working on these promotions, you're essentially a proxy for the brand. But was that a key consideration for you? And how did you think about that, navigating that career transition?
Well, I have to say the Sick Kids opportunity was a little unique based on the structure of the foundation and the particular job that I was doing. It was probably one of the smoothest transitions than I would have thought, especially given I didn't have that traditional marketing, client-side marketing background or even training from school. And that's partly because the brand team within the foundation is almost like a mini agency that is set up to support the fundraisers. So, you know, I moved in and I was the sort of account lead and strategy partner to the guy that's doing the major gift fundraising, to the team that's talking to corporate partners about brand partnerships and big corporate gifts, to the team that was trying to figure out how do we get more people to do runs and walks or lemonade stands for Sick Kids, to the mass marketing side who are selling monthly donors or one-time gifts or symbolic giving programs. So I was almost like the account person and intermediary to the internal creative team or the external agency for all the business units within the foundation. So it was kind of a bit of a cheat because I was still kind of agency, even though I was inside client. But I had the benefit of when it came to the brand decisions, I knew that was going to be within our team and that we had an external agency in Cassette that was pitching to us. So I was really excited to be on the other side. And fundamentally, I want to say it was the cause that attracted me to the job, but that would be a lie. It was because it was a brand transformation opportunity, and to be able to be the decision maker and steward the brand transformation from the client side instead of agency side, where sometimes even though you knew what the best idea was, if the client doesn't buy it, it never sees the light of day. The client has to be, and fundamentally it's the client's right. They're the ones that have to live with the results of whatever work they put out there. So it's their prerogative to choose what they like. And I just wanted the opportunity to have that prerogative. And then it was once I really got in the door at Sick Kids, then the cause, of course, as well, was just the work was so rewarding in so many different dimensions. But yeah, so the transition maybe was a little bit easier for me than it might have been if I'd gone to a bank or CPG.
I think that was a great explanation of what you were considering through that transition from the agency world into kind of sound like a mini agency within a client. As you reflect back on this fantastic career that you've built, what would you say is the philosophy that you think has been a through line through your own career that helped you navigate and think about what was next for you? Like, is there anything that maybe ties together all those different role changes?
So I think that for me, there was this clear and deliberate choice to balance doing the best job that I had in the moment with knowing where that could lead. I feel with a lot of sort of younger folks that I've worked with over the years is they're really focused on what the next job is and what the next title is or the next salary is, particularly agency side, where it can be the easiest and fastest way to get a title jump or a salary jump is to move. What's missing there is the ability to really get the foundational and fundamental skills. And with me, with this approach of focusing on doing the best job I could with the job I had in the moment, the best benefit was that for almost every job I've ever had or any move I've ever made, they came to me. I didn't have to go to them. I didn't have to ask. Because when you're focused head down on the job you have in the moment, making the most out of that, what can I learn? What can I do better? How can I help the organization from where I sit? Not because I think I'm smarter and I want the next job because I can do more. You can do a lot from where you are. That can unlock incredible benefits for you. And again, in my case, it was that the relationships, connections I'd made at every place that the next job I landed, I kind of could trust the universe a little bit that the phone would ring when it was the right time. And it also made sure that I never jumped for the wrong reasons. It wasn't about money or title. I jumped because it was a new learning opportunity. I was going to get exposure to a category or skills or type of project that I hadn't done before. Those were the things that motivated me to move, not overt growth. Growth is, I think, title and money are the benefits of making smart choices for what you want to learn. And you have to trust that if you focus on the right things, those things will come.
Oh, I love that advice so much, because we talk about this all the time about the advice that maybe I've heard and also I share with other people is just don't chase a title. But I never have. Then what do I do? And what you're talking about is you have energy that you can expend at a point in time, and you can focus on what's going to make me look really good, pinata, the next thing, as opposed to there's a thing I'm trying to build here, a skill set, a set of experiences that will make me the best for whatever is next. And if I expend my energy on doing that right now, that'll attract the people, the experiences, the opportunities, right? So I think that's such a great kind of reflection on the career so far. Super mm-hmm. useful. So thank you for that.
Yeah, and that's not to say that you shouldn't lift your head up and make sure you're aware of what's happening in whatever sector you're in, or you know, making sure people know what your ambitions are and that but I think there's a balance between sort of, again, making sure people know what you hope to do, but that comes second to crushing what you're doing right now.
Love it, Kate. And speaking of very thoughtful career moves, would love to unpack just more so the role at SickKids. And I know we've touched on it throughout the conversation, but would really love to unpack that now. It is such an incredible cause, that goes without saying. And your team has, you know, I think it's since 2016, so almost for the past decade, led the most ambitious healthcare campaign in Canadian history, and not only managed to meet it, but somehow managed to exceed it. I think it was $1.7 billion that's been raised thus far, which is tremendous. And it's been in large part due to that SickKids Versus platform that your team had developed. It is one of the most iconic and endearing platforms in Canada. It's every marketer's dream. That's to your point. I'm not surprised why so many marketers call you to learn more. We'd love to chat a little bit about the platform and the work your team does. You, as you mentioned, were on the ground floor at the very beginning of that brand transformation journey. So maybe if you can just share a little bit more insight of what it was like at the beginning of that journey, and maybe just in terms of how you're feeling now, just on the other end of it, to see how it's blossomed into this incredible campaign and cause.
Sure. Well, thanks for asking. And I never get tired of talking about it. So it's been a real, like, honestly, a real privilege. And I've worked with, like, honestly, some of the best people in the business. And it really was a true, like, team effort. It was a pretty great group of people that sort of conceived and delivered against this. I mean, at the end of the, at the beginning of the process, I think 2014, 2015, SickKids had a really strong brand at that time. I think the Better Tomorrows campaign in 2014 had won a bunch of awards, creative awards. That 2014 had been the best year ever for the organization from a fundraising standpoint. So, you know, why would we change? Why would you possibly risk what was going so well? And it kind of came down to math. So the new goal started at 1 billion, then it grew. And I know Carlos shared this part of the story in his podcast as well, but then it grew to 1.5 billion. So that number was ambitious. And when we looked at our sort of incremental revenue growth that we were seeing each year, we're like, well, you know, we can't possibly achieve the transformational growth we need in revenue by telling the same group of people what they already know about us. Like, we got to preserve that base of donors that we have, which at the time we defined as sort of women 45 years of age or older. They have children in their lives. like we can't alienate them. They're our core, but we absolutely are going to have to attract a whole new group of people to this brand and this organization if we're going to stand a chance of achieving these financial goals. So again, I think it was either a strategist we worked with, or it may have been Lori Davison. He was like, you can't expect transformational growth by telling the same group of people what they already know. And I think you can take that and apply it to any brand anywhere. And then from that moment in time, it was like, well, how can we pull ourselves away from the tropes of the category? And we landed on this sort of truth about SickKids, which is while the foundation was a charity, the hospital was actually probably the epitome of a performance brand. These are the best nurses, doctors, administrators, support staff, child life specialists in the country who get up every morning coming to work with one mission: to help kids, to win battles, to make something better. And that's like the epitome of a performance brand. And so if we as the foundation are a reflection of that institution, why are we acting like a poor charity that has to make you feel sorry for us and we're weak and helpless and please give and the kids need you? And so that it was that sort of moment in time when we realized that we could lean into the fact that we are a performance brand, that, you know, that unlocked the brief for Cassette. And ultimately, I believe it was the morning of the tissue session that this final idea came to be, which is if we're a performance brand, like a winning team, like a football team, New England Patriot winning this many, you know, Super Bowls in a row, you know, then they started to look at sports vernacular and devices. And that's when, you know, X versus Y and SickKids versus who's our enemy, that sort of came up. And we knew we had we didn't just have an execution, we had a platform idea in the room because we sat there and it just started growing. SickKids versus cancer, SickKids versus apathy, SickKids versus fear, SickKids versus worry versus cystic fibrosis. And when we started to feel the energy and the excitement and that it felt unique, it was, I mean, we made the decision in the room with, you know, full scap with marker renderings on it. Like that was it wasn't a big formal presentation. And then we went to work with socializing that. And before we socialized an idea or an execution that was really bold, we socialized the insight that, hey, SickKids, you are a fucking kick-ass group of amazing medical leaders who are working miracles every day, and we need to tell the world that. And so the hospital got excited. And so even though not everyone loved the creative and they loved the strategy and they loved the positioning, and then they trusted us on the execution and the craft and the edginess and the boldness of it. It was a pretty exciting time. And the idea of getting people bought into a strategy they couldn't argue with was really the magic to getting the stakeholder buy-in to this really bold approach.
All right. So that was a little bit of a taster of what 4Ps in a Pod is like. There's so much more to, and certainly in that episode, but then also in the other conversations that we've had with marketers from all over the industry in Canada. And we invite you to join us on 4Ps in a Pod. We're available on literally every single podcast provider out there. And we'd also love to hear your feedback on any people that you might want to hear from, any type of content that might be interesting to you if you're somebody who's looking to jump into the marketing industry. But our heartfelt thanks to Darian and the team at Marketing News Canada for connecting with us and for sharing the podcast love. Marketers love to talk to other marketers, and I think it was only fitting for us to connect at a certain point. And so we're going to sign off here. We'll see you again back on here very soon.
Thanks for listening to Marketing News Canada. For more episodes and other great stories from Canadian marketers, visit marketingnewscanada.com. All episodes are recorded in the Jelly Marketing Studio, thanks to our producer, Chris Penner, and editors Travis Jeffers and The Podfather.
There are some things you wouldn't mind being stuck with, like a large unexpected inheritance. An always-on-the-verge-of-death phone that has to be plugged in just right so it charges is not one of those things. Switch to Verizon and we'll pay off your old phone, up to $800 via prepaid MasterCard, so you can get a new one. Just trade in any phone from our top brands on any unlimited plan. With new line on my plan, additional terms apply for trade-in and pay off your phone offer. See Verizon.com for details.